The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9. Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you. And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President, CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, conveniently located right near the North Shore Mall. We've been doing financial planning and investment management services for individuals and families all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the southern New Hampshire area since 1968. Not me. I was only two then. My dad started the firm back then. Dad's since retired, 2007, so we're approaching his 10-year anniversary of his retirement. Dad's doing well, living down in Florida. But in 2018, not too far away, we're going to be celebrating 50 years of providing financial planning services and investment management services to people that live right here in the community. We've been so honored, so privileged to have individuals, families, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, aunts, uncles. A lot of people end up referring their family members to our office, and it's only natural. I mean, look, our business, the business of money, is really all about relationships. It's no longer about performance anymore. Trying to find the best performance is like throwing darts. It's, you know, you could throw darts at the actually, you can't even find mutual funds listed in the newspapers there anymore. And besides, who even reads newspapers these days? No offense to the newspaper guys, but it's so much easier to, you know, to pick it up on your iPad, get news flashes on your computer, even watching some of these news channels, which I kind of trashed a few times on this radio show. But, you know, it's where we get our sound bites of information. It's amazing, amazing to me how little newspaper reading we do. But you know what? That was something that's fascinating. I was at a conference a couple months ago, and someone asked the question, do we read more or less today than we did 20 years ago? And the answer actually is we read actually five times more today than we did back then. Now, I'm not saying what we read is good stuff. I'm not saying that it's great content, but think about how often you spend your day reading emails, texts, news flashes, little bits of information that appear on your screen, on your mobile device, whatever it might be, you're reading all the time, unlike other times when you weren't. We've become news junkies. We've become, especially when it comes to personal finance stuff, we've become junkies about that. You have to start taking care of your own personal finances. And as we sit here in this studio today, this Sunday, I'm not even sure the date today. I never know what day it is. I know it's Sunday morning because I was told to get here. But we're going to talk about financial advice in a language you can understand. It's what people really appreciate each and every week. And last week, actually, we talked about a story. And actually, it was 2 weeks ago when we talked about the story. I got an email from somebody who mentioned that he gave me some additional advice. We were talking about things that you need to save. No, people oftentimes wonder, how many years do I need to keep my statements? How many years do I need to keep tax returns, bills to my house, credit card statements, all that kind of stuff? And one of the things that I told people to do was to toss their credit card statements as soon as you've gone through the little roster and the transaction detail that's on that statement to make sure that you've been charged properly, of course. You can toss that statement. Well, someone emailed me and he says to me, Mark, you know, a lot of people buy these warranties. They buy these warranties with their credit cards. And sometimes you can even get a double warranty if something breaks. Let's say, for instance, he bought a big screen TV and it broke and he needed to rely on the warranty, and the company requested that he have the original sales receipt and he had to have the original statement that he got from the credit card company. And he said anything besides the original wouldn't work. Now, I think it's kind of interesting that he thought that, and perhaps that's the way it was. But folks, you don't need people, you know, these credit card companies would prefer not to even send you a credit card statement. you can print up a duplicate or replica credit card statement anytime you want to. Now, if you need the original receipt from Best Buy, from Target, wherever it might be, some of those companies, if they're big box companies, they can actually produce that receipt for you again if you bring them the credit card from which you purchased. I know that if you go to Target right now, let's say you go to buy an item with your credit card, and then you go to return it and you don't have the receipt, they go, don't worry, no big deal, just give me your credit card, we'll pull it up and we can do the refund even without the receipt. So it's amazing how technology continues to evolve time and time again, so much so that we, even though we want to try to take a step into technology and we think we've got it, it gets even better. So we've got to be prepared. We've got to be ready. But, you know, if you're one of those people that likes to save stuff, that wants to save their documentation, you know, you want to save your original receipts, that's one thing. But saving credit card statements, I got to tell you, toss them. Yeah, it might be a pain in the neck if you haven't never set it up online. You got to set up a login account and you got to find your statement. But folks, just do it. There's no need for it. Most of the stuff we talked about on things that you need to hold, like tax returns, keep them for 7 years. After that, throw them away. Utility bill statements, toss them as soon as you get them. Who needs that stuff? My mother-in-law, and yes, I talked about my mother-in-law 2 weeks ago, she still has her utility bills going back to 1968. And why? She says, well, you know, Mark, you know, if we sell this house, at some point I'm not going to be living here. We're going to need to sell this house and people are going to need to know what the electric bill was. I don't think they're going to care what it was in 1968. And you know what? It's pretty easy to go and contact the electric company, your cable company, your water bill, whatever it is, and find historically what it's been. In fact, if you go to Zillow.com, they do a pretty good estimate right now on what your property tax is and what some of those other fees are. You don't need to save the statements. Newspapers, there's another one. For whatever reason, people seem to love saving newspapers and magazines. I mean, they make great kindling, but why you're saving them and adding the clutter to your house, my goodness. I mean, I know why Adam Sandler saved it in Big Daddy. He used to use the newspaper because, remember, he had the person that was staying with him, he wet his pants and he wasn't quite sure how do you clean this up. And so he just dropped newspapers every time the little nephew or whatever he was peed on the floor. I know, not appropriate radio talk, but that there's no need to keep these newspapers around anymore, folks. Get rid of your paper. One of these days, and we usually do these things called a shredding party. We've hosted them at our parking lot in years past. I have gotten so many calls from people saying, Mark, why didn't you host the shredding party this year? Usually you do it in September or October. Well, I've had my arm twisted enough that we've decided we are going to do a shredding party, but probably we're going to wait till the spring. So you have plenty of time to gather all your stuff together, all your statements, all your newspapers, all your magazines, all that stuff you just want to get rid of. I mean, how many of your kids' pictures, posters, tests, cards do you want to continue to keep? I mean, maybe some of it, but we've probably overdone it a bit. Do you need all those baseball cards? Maybe. I don't know. Totally up to you. And you know what I find I save? A lot of people save old wallpaper, wallpaper rolls, the contact paper. You know, you put this wallpaper up in your house back in 1978. I remember going into my mother-in-law's house. She would go in and you'd go into their bathroom and they had that old flower foiled wallpaper on the walls. But not only was it on the walls, it was on the ceiling. Perhaps your house still has that. And I bet many of you that have that wallpaper still have some of those rolls sitting up in your attic. You can throw that stuff away. It's all great recyclable stuff. All right. We're going to talk about lots of things today. The markets have been pretty volatile. But when I say volatile, it means they've just gone up and down. It hasn't been anything dramatic. They move up and down a couple hundred points. And if the Dow Jones Industrial Average is 5,000, when markets move up and down a few hundred points, yeah, that's something significant. But when the market's hovering around 17,000, 18,000, and it moves up and down a couple hundred points, there's nothing to lose any sleep over. In fact, it's just a basic yawn. It's really nonsense. But the media, they got to work really hard. They got to figure out a way to build a story around yawns. And so what do they build it around? They blame the current presidential candidates. They blame oil prices. They blame terrorism. They blame other countries. Well, I'll tell you, folks, we're in a world today where interest rates are at record lows. I mean, record lows. If you want to buy a 10-year treasury, you want to go to the U.S. government and buy that, give someone $10,000, give the government $10,000 and say, here, you hold my money for 10 years and just please promise to pay me a guaranteed interest rate so that I know that I can have money every single year. And then at the end of the 10 years, you'll give me my money back. To have that guarantee backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, you're getting somewhere around 1.5% guaranteed for 10 years. Guaranteed for 10 years. You can't make a living. You can't retire on that. Now, who can afford to take those kinds of risks? Well, investment management companies can. Institutional management companies can, because you know what? They don't have an end date in mind. They're going on forever. They go on what's called in perpetuity. Will you go on in perpetuity? No, you won't. I can guarantee, there's not many guarantees I can make in this radio show. I guarantee that every single person listening to this radio show will die. Guarantee it. It's a pretty bold statement now, isn't it? I'm going to die. Now, if we all knew when we were going to die, it would be a lot easier to manage our money. But what's really interesting is, with interest rates being as low as they are, stocks being volatile where they might be, the state of countries all around the world in economic challenges that are significantly far worse than we're in, where do you put your money? Where do you go? Well, I'm going to share some thoughts that come from a few different meetings that I've been to, some conferences I've attended, some reading that I've done that is kind of interesting if you really think about how to begin to prepare where to place your money in the next 3 to 5 years. A couple other things I want to talk about. I want to talk about retirement and taxes. Last week, I did a story in my newsletter. We do this newsletter that's called Planning Pointers. Comes out each and every Friday morning. Comes out at 10:30 in the morning. If you'd like to get my free newsletter, just go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. We put out this story after I got a phone call from someone who was listening to the radio show. He calls me at my office and he says to me, Mark, I don't understand. You've been talking about retirement. You talk about taxes. When I retire, I'm not going to be paying any taxes. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, I was told that once I retire, I'm no longer going to have to pay any taxes. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. I said, maybe in your situation, maybe your situation allows for you to not have to pay any taxes. But to make that generalized statement that retirees will not pay taxes is wrong, just wrong. So I'm going to spend some time later in the show today talking about how taxes are charged, how you pay taxes on various sources of income and assets in retirement. Folks, you're going to pay taxes. Now, there's ways around trying to minimize the tax liability to support the income that you need. And that's where a professional comes into play. But you got to understand that you are going to pay taxes. We're going to talk about that. And the last thing that I want to share with you, if we have time. Actually, you know what? I'll do it right now. I'll tell you this quick little story. I came across this story that appeared in USA Today. USA Today reports that the cost of skipping class at college is outrageous. Now, I don't necessarily believe some of these statistics. I never generally believe research studies because I think that they can pick the pool of people they want to interview. They can ask the questions that they want. And our perspective on how things work and the way the rest of the world works is different too. So think about this. USA Today did some simple math and found that skipping class could cost you upwards of $24,960 over the course of 4 years. According to the College Board, the average annual tuition at an in-state public university is $9,139. Now, you may be thinking, well, I'm here in Massachusetts. There's no way that's right. Think about across the country, folks. About $9,000 is the in-state public tuition. At private universities, that in-state public tuition, around $31,000. That's at a private university. So for students taking a 15 credit hours a semester, it's calculated an in-state public university class, every time you go to class at a public school, it's costing you $30. So imagine every time you go to class, you got to write a check, or you got to hand someone $30 because that's what it's costing. And at a private university, it's $104. So the study came out that said in 2015, the average student get this, over 4 years, skips 240 classes by the time they graduate. I think, to me, I'm thinking, you're nuts. You're nuts. So for students at an in-state public university, that's costs $7,200 of wasted tuition over the course of 2 years. For private schools, it's $24,960 at private schools. Now, you're probably thinking, Mark, there's no way you're skipping 240 classes. Well, think about all of the students that register for college and don't go to any classes. Okay? There's a lot that do that. It's certainly a bunch of schools all around this nation. Not here, perhaps, but perhaps in other places. That screws up the average. And that's why I'm telling you, these reports are one thing. What reality is a whole nother story. And that's what we're going to talk to you about as we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to add some more reality, cut through all this nonsense, provide you with financial advice in a language you can understand. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Isn't it time to get serious about your retirement planning? Friedman Financial is a financial planning and investment management firm in Peabody. They've been helping professionals and retirees put solid strategies into play for 40 years. When you're planning to get serious about planning for retirement, call Friedman Financial for a free initial consultation at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or go online to FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, Financial.com.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial and North Shore 104.9. I was just sitting here talking with my producer, and he gave me this great idea. We're always trying to come up with money-saving ideas. Now, I'm not sure that this is something that he's proud of or that the school that he talks about is proud of, but I thought it was very interesting. We were talking about how the cost of skipping classes in college has been outrageous. They were saying this report that comes out of USA Today says that the average student who attends a private school can skip upwards of 240 classes over 4 years, which results in about $24,960 in wasted money that doesn't go to classrooms. And in public schools, it's about $7,200 of wasted tuition. Well, this thought that just came up here was, my producer was telling me that he used to teach over at Bunker Hill Community College. And week 3, week 4 would go by, and he'd realize that there's people that have signed up to take the class, and they still haven't shown up. And you're wondering, how are they going to pass this test? And then you begin to realize they signed up for Bunker Hill Community College because they can get a parking pass. And the cost of Bunker Hill Community College and to park in Bunker Hill Community College is cheaper than the commuting cost or the parking cost of having to park in Boston. You might as well just park in the lot at Bunker Hill Community College, hop on the T station right across the street, head into Boston, go to work, and then get back in your car. So like I told you, these studies that we get that talk about the average, you have to understand what those outliers are. What are some of those averages that really, what are some of those numbers that really pull down the averages? You can't believe a lot of this stuff you read. All these stories, take a look. How accurate do you really think the poll numbers are right now? As you think about the election, are they accurate? Who knows? Everybody has an opinion, right? Whether you go to Politico, whether you go to real life politics, whether you listen to ABC, CNN, CNBC, it doesn't matter. Everybody has an opinion. Now, you want to talk about when opinions are going to kick in? Get ready for next Thursday night. Next Thursday night, I am going to venture that this will be one of the most watched television shows, maybe even greater than the final episode of Seinfeld. Maybe the final episode of MASH. Remember MASH? A long time ago. People are going to be watching this debate. The debate between Hillary and Trump. Now, I still wonder, why is it that I refer to Hillary as Hillary and Trump as Trump, as opposed to Clinton and Trump or Hillary and Donald? You know, why do we do that? And just a thought that I have out there. Random thoughts. This is going to be heavily watched, and everybody's going to scrutinize every single word. The Twitter feeds are going to light up like crazy. Facebook is going to go nuts. You're going to see all sorts of people that are going to say which words came out of each candidate's mouth that simply wasn't true. But will it drive your feeling either further away from or further towards one of those two candidates? It's tough to say. And you know what? A lot of it is driven by what station you will watch the debate on. You watch MSNBC, they will rip Donald Trump to shreds and find just perfume and flowers surrounding Hillary Clinton. you watch Fox News, and they're going to continue to show repeats of Hillary Clinton getting pushed into a van as her head wobbles on the top of her shoulders, and Trump standing at the top of a mountain saying, I'm in charge here. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. No one knows what the outcome is going to be. But this is the whole politics around politics, I think, is just ridiculous. All right, one other random thought that just popped into my head. So I've been talking, I was sitting around this weekend, and I'm thinking to myself, when I was a kid, I'm 50 years old. When I was a kid, and I'd get invited to a birthday party, how much money did my parents spend to buy a gift for me to bring to a birthday party? How much money was it that they generally spent? And I've been asking this question around. What did you think you spent back in 1970s, 1980s, when I'm 50, when you were going to a birthday party, what did your parents spend? And I thought it was around 15, 20 bucks. That's what they'd spend. So I ask you this. Today, if you've got a child that's going to a birthday party and bringing a present to a birthday party, how much do you generally spend? The answer is 20 bucks. So I'm curious. That's almost 30 years, almost 35 years. When did $20 become the staple for gifts for 30? Everyone talks about inflation, right? Everything's going up. Cost of goods are going up. Well, either back 35 years ago, you got some really good presents at 20 bucks, because $20 over 30 years should be like a $60 or $70 gift today. But we're not doing that. But someone brought this up. The thing that's different about birthday parties today than what they were 35 years ago. When you went to a birthday party when you were a kid, where was the birthday party held? Generally at somebody's house. They lit the grill. They'd have a water fight. You'd have, you know, water guns. You'd have water balloons. There might be some candy. Today, might even have a sleepover. Might even have a sleepover. You couldn't rent movies because movies weren't available to be rented back then. You might have had a sleepover around the fact that something was coming on at 8 o'clock, you know. But today, the amount of money that parents spend on their kids' birthday parties is insane. $300, $500, $1,000 to do a birthday party at laser tag. Now, you were making money. Your kid was making money 35 years ago getting those gifts. Today, it's costing you, mom and dad, and everyone's trying to outdo the next person. I'll tell you, my son actually went to a birthday party this past week over at, what's the name of the farm over here in Danvers? Is it Merino Farm or something like that? They do the with the corn maze. He said it was amazing. They got some great stuff over there. If you want to get over to Merino Farm, go check that out. I think it's Merino Farm. Check that out with your kids. Anyways, I was talking about this capital markets and the fact that the markets have gone up and down and all that stuff. Well, BlackRock put together a piece that they just sent to me over the week that talks about what their outlook is. Their outlook is on how markets are going to perform in the next 5 years. And I thought that's kind of interesting, because wherever you go, you pick up Morningstar, you go to Yahoo Finance, you take a look through any type of money and investing book, and everybody wants to tell you how investments performed over the past few years, how they did over the 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. It used to be that the stock market over average 20 years did about 9.2%. Should you expect that the stock market will perform that way again? It used to say that the bond market would perform on average 4 to 5% over an average 20 years. Should you expect that to happen over the next 5 to 10 years? Let me give you this statistic. This comes out of Vanguard. They put together this calendar year of returns. It takes a look at the S&P 500 and it goes back to 1926. And it says since 1926, 1926, 27, 41, 52, 63, all those years, at the end of every year, someone posts a performance number. How did the S&P 500 do? How did it do? Well, we've always talked about the fact that on average, the S&P 500 has done over 20 plus years, something around 9%. So what was interesting is they broke it down into, they called it a histogram. And what a histogram is, imagine drawing a bunch of columns on a piece of paper, and at the very bottom of the columns, in the very middle column, you write the number 1 to 5%. So in that column, that means if the S&P 500 returned between 1 to 5% in, let's say, 1939 or 1941, you would actually write the name of that year in that column, building it up. So you go out 5% intervals both ways. So the one before that might have been negative 4 to 0%. To the right of it might be 6 to 10%. You're kind of building out the columns and you build the histogram. So what I found fascinating to me was we've heard over the past 20 years, year after year after year after year, that the average stock market return is 9%, 9.2%. It used to even be higher. It was in the tens at one point. So it made me think, the range of performance of S&P 500 between now and 1926 was anywhere between negative 40 to positive 55. Negative 40 to positive 55. Remember, folks, there's never been a time when it was zero, where everybody lost all their money. Never been that time in the stock market, but the worst has been about down 40 on a one-year calendar basis. So think about this. If the market averages between around 9% over 20 years, how many times did the market, did the S&P 500 produce a return of between 6 and 10%? Of all of those years, those 80 plus years, how many times did it actually finish the year somewhere between 6 and 10? Now that's between where 9.2 is. I'm talking about 80 different choices you have. Do you know what that number is? I'm going to count them here for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. That's all. In order to get 9.2% over the average 20 years, you would have only been able to get an average rate of return of between 6 and 10 only 7 of those 80-something years. So you know what that means? That means in order to get a decent rate of return on your investments, you needed to do much better or much worse. You can't find investments that are going to consistently provide you year after year after year the same performance number, unless, of course, you want to buy a bond. And a 10-year bond right now, that's paying 1.5%. How's that sound for you? So we got to be a little bit different, and we have to think differently, because even what's happened in years past, it's going to be different moving forward. We're still going to get the benefits of the stock market, of owning an economy, of companies making money. We're going to get the benefits of the fact that the United States is one of the strongest economies in the world and people are going to want to give us money. But what should we assume? What can we plan? What can we hope for the next 5 years as a rate of return? Think about it. Bonds, like I said, used to do 5. What could they do over the next 5 years? How about stocks? What you should expect? And if you have a collection of stocks and bonds, what should your average rate of return be? I'll tell you this, if you're planning on 8, 9, 10% on average, you're crazy. You're taking huge amounts of risk here. Well, like I said, I've got this report that just came out of the BlackRock Investment Institute. It's their July report. I don't have the August numbers yet, but I do have their July numbers. And I'm going to share what some of their thoughts are, what some of their projections are, what you should start to put as realistic expectations for your portfolio moving forward, and then think about, is this the right strategy for me as I begin to prepare for my retirement, for spending money, for accumulating assets, whatever it might be. I'm going to get to this, but I want to remind you again about my newsletter. It comes out each and every Friday. It's called Planning Pointers. It arrives in your mailbox, easy into your inbox, not that metal thing that's out at the end of the street. Into your inbox, all you need to do is go to my website, FriedmanFinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D. financial.com. Go to the bottom of the website, click on the button, and you will be all set up and registered to get my next week's newsletter called Planning Pointers. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. We are in the middle, about halfway through our day today, and oh, I got to tell you about something that's coming up next week. I told you about, you know, the debates coming up on Thursday. That'll be a fun time, something to do, you know, get the popcorn, pull out an ice cream sundae. I wonder how much will be scripted and how much will be just improvisation. And that should be a lot of fun on Thursday night. But you know what happens on Thursday? I mean, on Friday, September 30th. That's right. Topsfield Fair. Back open and ready to run on September 30th. I will be there for 11 days. As many of you know, I run a booth at the Topsfield Fair. It's called the B'nai B'rith booth. It's right across from the main entrance to the fair. It's a huge booth. We have an awning. It's sheltered. I mean, if it's raining, and you can usually count on it to rain during the Topsfield Fair, it's one of the things that we always look forward to each year. But we are covered. We have picnic benches, but we serve everything. If you've been to the booth, you know that we have the lowest prices and the biggest portions at the fair. Hot dogs, hot pastrami, brisket sandwiches, knishes, matzo ball soup, bagels and lox. We do all this Jewish fare at the Topsfield Fair, but we also throw in a few cheeseburgers, too. I know that if you're not Jewish, maybe you don't realize that cheeseburgers aren't considered to be something that's kosher because you're not supposed to mix milk products and meat products, but we get away with it at the fair. It's okay. It's the fair. You try to eat everything, and no one eats anything healthy at the fair anyways. So, hey, if you happen to swing by the Topsfield Fair, you happen to swing by there any day during the week, usually on the weekends, I'm there the whole time during the day parts, during the weekdays, my wife is working there. But if you happen to swing by, ask for me. Tell me you listen to the show, and I've got a special prize just for you. So come find me at the fair. We'll be talking about this the next couple weeks as that come up. All right, I promised you that I would share some of the insights that the BlackRock Investment Institute had shared with me on how they believe investments will perform over the next 5 years. And it's really, really interesting. Look, if I go back, they have this report out here which shows the expected annual nominal returns back in 2009 was around 15%. That's what they thought average equities would perform. In 2012, they expected it to be around 9%. In 2015, you know what they're expecting? 2016, what they're expecting from stocks? Somewhere around 6%. So I want you to start thinking about it as you begin to look forward. That was to 2016. And now, as they look out here, I'm looking at this number. Typical, where's my number here? I'm trying to find it. It's covered here. I'm looking for you. Where are you there? Here we go. Large cap investments expected to produce under 5% over the next 5 years. So think about that. If you're going to invest in the stock market and the experts are predicting that you're going to do 5%, should you be building your projections on your financial plans at 6 and 8%? Many financial plans are built out at that level. They're built out at that level. And you say to yourself, well, wait a second. How can I use 8% or 6% as a projection number if the estimate is that the return of stock investments only is going to be around 5%. And what's bonds going to do? Well, the aggregate bond index is expected to do around 1. Now, you may be able to find bonds that pay 2, 3, 4%. But if interest rates go up, we all know that the value of bonds goes down. So the actual return that you could get could be around 1. So if you have half of your money in bonds earning 1, half of your money in stocks earning 5, what does that give you for a rate of return? That's 3. But if your projections with your financial planner are at 6, could that be a problem? I think so. I think you have to be realistic. Now, remember, these are just projections. These are guesses by BlackRock. So I think when you work with your financial planner, as you're beginning to think for the future, certainly for the next 5 years, what could my rate of return be historically over the next 5 years for me to feel comfortable about a 50-50 or 60-40 allocation? Think 3 or 4%. Now, if you say to yourself, well, that's not good enough, and some people may be saying that's not good enough, well, then what do you need to do to improve your performance? You know what you need to do? You need to take more risk. And are you willing to do that? Buying a collection of blue chip stocks in a mutual fund or an exchange traded fund, yeah, that's risk because it can go up and down. But I think there's equally as much risk in bonds as there is in stocks. However, if you want to take more risk, you could buy emerging markets. Look, the likelihood of emerging markets over the next 5 years, that's probably going to get you among the better performing asset classes in 5 years. But it's not going to be a pretty ride to get there. You could be up 50% one year. You could also be down 60% another year. It's wild, but over time, you could get some performance there. So one of the keys to success here, one of the important keys to success in building your portfolio is when someone says, do you own stocks or stock mutual funds or exchange-traded funds? Make sure that you don't have what we call diversification. Not diversification, diversification. There are many people that will own, for instance, GE, Dell, Disney, Fidelity Growth Company, Fidelity Contra, Vanguard S&P 500 Index, the S&P 500 ETF, American Growth Fund. And they have all of these investments. They go, look, well, I got diversification. You do not. You basically have a collection of investments that all invest in the same stuff. So when the S&P 500 does well, you're going to do really well. But in the years when the S&P 500 does poorly, you're going to be crying. And chances are you won't have the stomach to go the ride. You'll want to cut back. You'll want to get out. What I want you to do is I want you to start thinking about your portfolio from the perspective of, yes, I want to be in the stock market for some of my money. Maybe it's 50, maybe it's 70, maybe it's 60%. But I want to be invested in different stuff. I want to invest in some of the biggest companies in America. I want to invest in some of the biggest companies worldwide. Maybe it's in developed companies. Maybe it's in emerging companies. When you think of investing in the United States, do you think of investing in Nestle's or BMW or Philips Electronics or Teva Pharmaceuticals? Those are not companies that are in the United States. They're based outside of the United States. You should have some positions. I'm not suggesting those stocks. Let's be clear. I'm not recommending those stocks. I'm using this purely as an example. Should you be looking at Baidu? Have you heard of Baidu? B-A-I-D-U? Baidu is, I want to say it's like the eBay or the Amazon of China. Probably never heard of these companies. When you think about it, I'm always floored when I watch the Olympics and they have the opening ceremonies and they have all these countries and these participants come walking in and you see the United States of America with a great showing as they walk down the streets of walk along the track in Rio, and it says 230 million population. Wow. And then you see China, and they might have the same number of participants in the Olympics, and they say 2 billion people. 2 billion people. India, same kind of number. Folks, we're a minority. We are so biased in the way we think about everything that we do. I have the good fortune of getting to travel all around this world. And when you see how developed or how many opportunities that exist for making money, for being a participant, think about the number of cans of soda that Coca-Cola would need to sell to China to be as saturated as they are here in the United States. They're not saturated in China, meaning it's as easily accessible to everybody. Now, there are rules, there's regulations, there's government intervention, there's all sorts of issues that happen. But if you want to be a participant, if you want to be a growing participant in growing your wealth over time, even preserving your wealth over time, especially if you're taking money out of it, you need to be better diversified, not diversified. I give the term diversification to my good friend Bert White, who's the chief investment officer over at LPL Financial. He came up with that term, but I copy it from him and he lets me use that word. But I'm telling you, folks, you got to be a little creative. Now, how about on the bond side? Can you keep your money in cash? God, no. God, no, you can't keep your money in cash. You got to spread it around. You have to be in fixed income securities. You have to be in income-bearing securities, and that might be a combination of different types of bond investments, different types of credit-paying investments. You have to mix it up. Do you want to go too far out on the maturity curve? What I mean by that is, do you want to buy a 2-year bond or a 30-year bond? What if I told you the 30-year bonds right now paid 4%? You might say, well, wow, that's pretty good, Mark. I can get 4%. Now, you're going to need to give somebody your money. Call it $10,000. Give it to the U.S. government. They promise to pay you 4% or so for the next 30 years. And you might think, whoa, that's pretty good. But how valuable will your bond be if 2 or 3 years from now someone wants to buy a 30-year bond and they can get 6? Because that's what interest rates could be then. Now, you're sitting around thinking, well, I bought this bond, this 30-year bond, and I'm getting 4% on it. Now I could cash that in and trade went up for a 6% bond. Huh, that would be pretty cool. I just call my broker and do that. And the broker says, well, I'm sorry, Mr. Client. We can sell that bond for you and I know you want your $10,000 back, but all I can give you for it right now is about eight. Eight? Oh, you're taking a $2,000 commission on me? No, not at all. That's not the case at all. Who wants to buy a 4% paying bond that has 28 years left on it from you when they can buy a 30-year bond at 6%? It's called supply and demand. That's all it is. So the longer you go out on the maturity curve in a world where interest rates are moving up, you run the risk of losing value, losing the marketability value of your bonds. So I want you to be careful. I want you to be sure that you know what you own. It's very, very, very important that you know what the construction is of the portfolio that you have and what the risks are. If interest rates move up, and you know what? They're gonna. Now, here's something that's really fascinating that I learned. I was out a couple days ago with some folks that were talking about just global economics. And interestingly enough, I told you it's lousy that the 1 year, the 10-year treasury is paying about 1.5%. But did you know that there were over 40 countries right now around this country, around the world, where their 10-year bond in their country pays a negative interest rate? You know what that means? It means you have to pay the bank or the government for them to hold your money. And the chances are that interest rates over there, they're not looking to raise their interest rates. In fact, their economies are struggling so much, they're thinking of lowering their interest rates even more. That's not happening in the United States. It's one of the few countries in the world right now where the discussion of raising interest rates, pulling ourselves out of a difficult situation, making our economy stronger and better. So do you know what that means when that happens? When we're moving our interest rates up and all these other countries are potentially having to lower their interest rates even more? Governments want to put their money in the United States. They can at least get something. And when money comes in from other governments, it's not in $10,000 chunks. It's in billion and trillion dollar chunks. So now all of a sudden the government gets all this money. What do we do with all this money that's coming in? We have to be careful with it because you know what? As soon as those countries start to raise their interest rates, they're taking their money out. But there's going to be an interesting source of flows of money coming into this country. It's going to make our dollar stronger. It's going to make our economy stronger. And I believe that's something that could happen in the short time. 5 years, 6 years from now, all that money that's going into our government, it's coming right out. But it'll allow you to continue to shop in Europe, to go visit other countries, to go out and explore at a very reasonable cost. And I want you to do that because you know what? As Americans, we need to stop being so restrictive in our lifestyles and the things that we see. We need to go out and see what else is out there. And there's plenty to see. I'd encourage you to do it. Spend some money, go on a vacation, go to Asia, go to Europe, go to Africa. I don't care where you go, you're going to find some great deals. Spend some money, and then let's get serious about your money even more. We've got to take a quick break. When we get back, I get some stuff to talk to you about retiring. There's a retiree, like I said, that called me up and said, Mark, I'm not going to have to pay taxes in retirement. I thought, well, that's an interesting conversation I'm going to have with him. When we get back, I'm going to share with you some of the different ways that you're going to have to pay taxes in retirement. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Do you ever wonder whether you'll have enough money to retire? Retiring for the Genius is a blueprint to prepare for a comfortable retirement. This easy-to-read guidebook on living your life in retirement is written by certified financial planner Mark Friedman and host of Dollars and Cents, heard here every Sunday morning from 8 o'clock until 9 a.m. You'll find the tools and templates helpful so you can prepare to make smart decisions on how to spend your money in retirement. If you're older than 55 and expect to spend between $4,000 and $10,000 a month in retirement, Retiring for the Genius is a treasure map for achieving your successful retirement. When it comes to retiring, don't be a dummy. Pick up a copy of Retiring for the Genius at Amazon.com.
Pick up your treasure map for retirement. Available now at Amazon.com. Search Mark Friedman, Retiring for the Genius.
Welcome back to the final segment of Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, president and CEO of Friedman Financial. Been doing this radio show here at North Shore 104.9 for almost 4 years now, and it has been my pleasure to serve the needs and talk to the folks that live here on the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and in the southern New Hampshire area. Many of you have reached out to me, reached out to my office to say, you know what, Mark, you sound like you take this thing very seriously, this whole financial planning thing, the whole investment thing. I've been working with an advisor or a collection of advisors, and they've done a nice job for me, but I don't see any one of them as being the guy that will take this whole thing serious, that will wrap this whole thing together, help me understand what I've collected, give me some advice and some guidance so that I can begin to prepare for my retirement, so that when my paycheck stops, I know that I'll have some resources to turn to and some income streams to draw upon so that I can live the retirement that I want. If that sounds like you, we'd love to talk with you. We offer a free initial consultation to anybody who is listening to the radio show. Give our office a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. When I last left you, we were talking about the fact that I got this call from a listener who said to me, Mark, when I retire, I'm not going to have to pay any taxes. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Yes, there are situations in retirement where you may not have to pay taxes. Let me kind of explain some of those to you. Number one, let's say your only source of income is Social Security. You have no money, you have no savings, but the only check that you get is Social Security. I don't care whether that check is for $2,000 a month, $2,800 a month, or $1,000 a month. You are absolutely right. If that is your only source of income, you will not have to pay taxes. You still have to file a tax return, but you won't owe any taxes. Let's say, for instance, you have sources of income from interest, dividends, IRAs, Social Security. Yet you also have enormous medical bills. And those medical bills are so large that you're able to deduct the cost of those medical bills against the income that you're bringing in. You may not have to pay any taxes. That's a very possible thing. Let's say also, for instance, you get Social Security income and the rest of your money is in the bank. Let's say you have $1 million in the bank. $1 million. And you also collect $24,000 a year in Social Security income. Let's say you take $24,000, your Social Security, and you say, you know what? I'm going to my bank and I'm going to pull, I don't know, $50,000 out every single year to support my income. So I'm going to have $75,000 in income. Guess how much you have to pay in taxes on that? Nothing. Now you might say to yourself, well, why? When you go to the bank right now and you take $10,000 out or even $200 out through the ATM machine, how much tax do you pay on that? Nothing. You've already paid tax on that money, right? You got your paycheck. They withheld the money from you. You took those dollars. You stuck them in the bank. And you know you're not earning much in the way of interest on it. So if you take money out, if you took $50,000 out to go buy a car, do you pay taxes on that $50,000? No. So there are situations in retirement where you may not have to pay taxes. There are other situations, most of those situations, where there are taxes due. But what you want to do is you want to work with someone, and it's not necessarily your accountant here. Your accountant is just reporting what you give to them. You want to work with a financial planner, a certified financial planner professional, who will take a look at all of your resources and say, okay, you want to spend $75,000 this year? That's fine. Let's figure out the best places to take the money so that you'll pay the least amount in taxes. I'm always amazed at the number of people that will come up to me and they'll say, Mark, I think I need $100,000 in retirement. $100,000. Why'd you come up with $100,000? Well, I'm figuring that I need to spend $6,000 a month. 6 times 12 is $72,000. And I'm in the 28% federal tax bracket. So I'm going to have to spend $28,000 on taxes. The rest is my $72,000. Folks, that is the wrong way to approach things. First of all, I got to tell you that of the 450 households that we serve in my office, the typical retiree pays at a tax rate of around 11 to 12%.
11 to 12%. And I'm going to guess, unless you are working and making probably 300,000 or more, you're probably paying a tax rate of around 11 to 15%. So I want you to think about this. Now, I know this might require you to put the thinking cap on here for a minute. I want you to go find your tax return from last year. Go find your tax return. Everybody's tax return for the first couple pages looks the same. It's called a 1040. At the very bottom of your 1040 is something that's called your adjusted gross income. What it does in the very bottom of that 1040, it reports all of the sources of income that you've received over the course of the year. You might have tax-free income. You might have wages and salary income. You might have distributions from your IRA. You might have a pension. You might have a small business that you get income from there. You might have farm income. I don't know. You could have all sorts of different types of income. Well, let's first start here. Let's say you are making $100,000 a year and you participate in your company's 401k plan. And you say, you know what? I want to put $10,000 into my company 401k plan. So if you're making $100,000 and you put $10,000 into your 401k plan, do you know that on your 1040, on your the wages line, the first line on your tax return, it does not say that you made $100,000 this year. It says you made $90,000. That's because 10 of it went to the 401k before you paid tax on it. So it showed $90,000. So you add up all of these numbers, and each one of them is a little different. You add them up at the very bottom. It's called the adjusted gross income. Flip that piece of paper over. That number that's at the bottom gets carried up to the very top. And then you get to do some things that are called deductions. Some people itemize their deductions, and some people just get a personal deduction, a standard deduction. But many people pay property taxes. They pay state taxes. They make charitable contributions. Maybe they have a big medical bill. Maybe they pay legal fees. Maybe there's all different ways in which you can get deductions. And you deduct all, you add up all of those numbers and then deduct what's available against that adjusted gross income number. So let's say that number that started off, let's say at 100,000 is now after deductions, now it's down to 80. You paid capital, you paid interest on your mortgage, you paid property taxes, all that kind of stuff. Then on top of that, you get something that's called a personal exemption. And a personal exemption is a certain amount of money that you get to deduct for every person who's a dependent in your house. You do that math, you subtract that out. So maybe after all is said and done, what started out as $100,000 in income now is 60 because you got to take all those deductions. And so you have what's called, this is your taxable income, $60,000. So do you take 28% of that number? No. You go through the tax table and a certain amount of your $60,000 is tax-free. Then the next amount is at 10%. The next amount is at 15%. And by the time you actually get up to that, even that 28% number, actually it's 60,000, you wouldn't even hit it. And so you then look at the number at the bottom. How much is my total tax against what I made? And you'll find that that number is somewhere in the 11 to 16% range. You're not in the 28% tax bracket. How many times have you watched and you've listened to people saying, well, you know, this is the type of return you could get or the types of interest amounts you can get from a bond or from an annuity even. If you read the small print, it says, assuming a 40% tax bracket. I've yet to find many people who are in the 40% tax bracket. You got to be making, as your taxable income, probably well over 500 grand. There's not many. It's a very small segment of the population. Now, let me put some reality check in here. I'm going to add this to it. We've all heard the term the one percenters, right? The one percenters. Well, did you know that if you make $95,000 or more, you're considered among the five percenters? If you make $95,000 or more, you're considered amongst the five percenters. If you make $125,000 or more, you're considered amongst the two percenters. And if you make more than $250,000, yes, you're considered part of the one percenters. Okay, but that 1% could consist of someone who makes $251,000 or Bill Gates who makes $2.6 billion. That's all part of the 1%, right? We are very spoiled. We're very fortunate that we live in, if you will, an affluent segment of this country. I don't care whether you're in Linfield or Lynn. if you're in Revere or Reading. It doesn't matter. We're making more money than what the average population makes in America. How many people do you see running around living on a $13,000 farm income? Not many. It doesn't happen here. Our belief in what the 1% is totally different. If you lived in Iowa or South Dakota, you'd come driving here into Beverly, Massachusetts, and look around at the North Beverly train station and saying, I'm surrounded by the 1%ers. And the people here in Beverly are going, what are you, nuts? But when you put things into perspective, we are. We are. We have to realize that when you're looking at statistics, when you're hearing about national studies, when you're hearing about what the average person did or what the average income is, the average tax rate, folks, you are on a totally different spectrum than the rest of the population. You live on the coastline going up and down from Maine to Florida or from Washington to San Diego. Most of those people, part of that, at least the 5%ers, maybe even, oh, by the way, you want to know what the 10%ers are? $80,000 or more. You're amongst the 10%ers. Do you know when you become the middle? You know when the 50% number hits? $42,000. So think about that. 50% of our population is making less than $42,000 a year. 50% of our population making less than $42,000 a year. You got to put it all into perspective. If you're going to spend $63,000 a year for a private education in college, for your kid to get a philosophy major so that they can make $31,000 out of school and make that for the next 20 years of your life, folks, put that thinking cap back on and really ask yourself, is it worth it? And if it is worth it, please don't complain about the 1, 5, and 10%ers because you asked for it. I'm sorry you did. We try to provide financial advice in a language you can understand, and sometimes I offer some advice that people just don't want to hear. I just lay it out and call it like I see it. I may be wrong, and you can always argue with me, and I love those arguments. But each and every Sunday, we're going to lay it out there, giving you the advice that you need so that you'll come back again next Sunday and tune in for more. That's going to do it for me today. I've got to get out of here. We've got Curtain Up coming up in just a few moments. Have a great time. I'll see you at the fair starting next week. If you're around, swing by the B'nai B'rith booth, say hello, and I'll get a special treat for you. Have a great day. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
The prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.